Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, an upcoming literary festival celebrates writers in the San Francisco Mission. Then a writing center celebrates 10 years of teaching Oakland youth the joys of writing and publishing kids, too. Today's theme is about writing across generations. That's all coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, on KALW 91.7 FM. Book nerds will be getting lit next weekend for the Flor Encanto Literary Festival in the San Francisco Mission. Flor Encanto translates to flower and song. You can check out readings and films by and about Latino, Latinx, Latine writers. And this will be happening in different spaces in the Calle 24 Latino Cultural District, which is around 24th and Mission. I'm here joined by Lourdes Figueroa, who is a queer Chicana ex-oral poet and poetry filmmaker, and KLW's own Josiah Luis Alderete, who is the host of Bay Poets and co-owner of the bookstore Medicine for Nightmares, which I say I spent too much money at, and I'm sure Josiah Luis knows my credit card number by now. But I'm so happy to have you all on to talk about the Flor Encanto Literary Festival that's happening in the San Francisco Mission next weekend, around 24th and Mission in the Calle 24 Latino Cultural District.
It's gonna take about 20 minutes.
So, and I know Josiah is working at the bookstore and talking to me at the same time. Busy, 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 bee. So, Josiah, give us a little history of the festival.
Oh, of course, of course. And I'm actually doing 9 things at the same time, Janae. It's not just 2. That's the way us working artists grind. We do the multiple things at once.
That's how it is.
Speaking of working.
Yeah.
Speaking of working. Working artists will be... There will be many of them at the Flor Encanto Festival. But for context, like you asked, the Flor Encanto is part of a long literary tradition that goes way back. It's got indigenous roots, but it is also a gathering, a poetic gathering, these gatherings have been going on all over California for years. But when Alejandro Murgia, who was the first Latino poet laureate of San Francisco, became poet laureate, he started a Flor Encanto here in the Mission, which is still going strong. It's the only homegrown literary festival in the city of San Francisco that highlights BIPOC literature, neighborhood literature, our literature, right? So
yeah.
It's a beautiful festival that happens every year. And I feel really blessed to be a part of this long tradition of literature, you know, of homemade, homegrown literature here in San Pancho. So, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Congratulations on another year. Lourdes, what is special about this year?
Everything is special about this year. I think every year it's like so much comes through, like little lucecitas, little lights, like propel for the next lights. So we have again 17 events.
Mm-hmm.
They're all free. Amanda Ayala is going to be leading our invocation and Balmy Alley. So every year we have the invocation, and it's one of the most beautiful parts of Flor Encanto is the beginning of the whole festivities. And to follow that, we have our poetry paseo.
Mm-hmm.
We renamed it from Poetry Crawl to Paseo de Poetry.
Okay.
And we bring poetry to different businesses there on Mission on 24th. And it's incredibly beautiful, incredibly powerful, humbling. We have film screenings on Saturday. Two documentary features that are based on 2 poets that have contributed to our literary landscape that have also like opened doors and created a different way of being in poesía here.
Yeah.
In San Francisco. We have one on Raul Salinas and then one on Alejandro Murgia's work.
Yes, and I definitely want to. We're going to talk about that too as well. We're going to go in depth in that because I have some clips from those films. Just to learn, you know, I'm one to learn more about those writers, and I know our listeners probably do as well. I have a question, Lourdes. You talked about the invocation being really beautiful. Can you give us an idea of like what it's like?
Well, we what we do, we honor our antepasados, our people, poets, specifically literature antepasados who have formed the literary munditos here in the mission and have contributed so much. And so we do, it's a way of the way it opens, it's a blessing. We announce the names of those who have passed on, who have contributed to who we are now. So there's you get the present, past, and the future, because there's also young poets that come through that evening. And for me, it's very magical. It's even more magical that we have Amanda doing it this year, because it's the new generation. We usually have like Naomi Quinones that comes through, and Amanda's gonna bring in her magic. And we honor, we name those who came before us.
Nice.
And that's one of the most beautiful parts, I think. And we have flowers, and then afterwards we walk as a grupito from business to business, sharing a voice.
I love how you bring the community. I mean, this event is not just in the community, but just how you bring the community in. And that's a beautiful way to start off the festival. So I want to go back to the poets that you all mentioned and the documentaries. So one of the documentaries screening is called Keeper of the Fire. And as you all said earlier, it's about Alejandro Murguia. And he was the sixth poet laureate of San Francisco and the first Latino to hold that title. So tell us more about him. And forgive, my Spanish is not nearly as beautiful as the way you all speak it, so forgive me. But tell us about him for those who don't know, and his connections to the mission.
Yeah, I mean, Alejandro is a foundational poet to the neighborhood in so many ways, because like we mentioned, right, he not only was he the first Latino poet laureate of San Francisco, he's also a teacher for years at State. Literature, Chicano studies. He was also deeply involved in the liberation movements in Central America. Mm-hmm. He was a poet that became politicized here in the mission and actually went back to Nicaragua and fought, not just with words, but with bullets. He was trained as a guerrillero, mm-hmm. and he is a warrior. And he's also a very kind, beautiful teacher. Whose presence is still very much alive here in the neighborhood. He's here all the time. You know, you see him walking down the street, which is, for me, what makes mission literature so beautiful is this. You know, you're not talking about a group of dead white male poets or writers. These are poets that are still very much alive, part of the mission, connected while walking down the street, you know, shopping at Casa Lucas, hanging out on the corner. So having a movie about Alejandro, who is such a foundational, influential poet in the neighborhood, is really special for us this year. It was directed by Lou DeMatteis and David Brown. Mm-hmm. So this is a documentary that's been in the works for a really long time. And so we're just really proud and excited to have it screen. And also we're screening it with an amazing movie that Laura Varela made, an hermana from Texas, about another foundational poet, Chicano poet, Raul Arcelinas, who has a lot of connections to Alejandro. Alejandro, when he had his press in the mission here, Pocho Che Press, the first poet that Alejandro published was Raul Arcelinas. So there's a lot of really beautiful connections there. And then Laura's film is amazing, man. And
okay, wait, hold on.
Of course.
Slow down. So let's, because I have clips for both films. So I want people to really learn about these two men. So let's play. And to see the connections too as well. So let's play a clip from Keeper of the Fire, and this is about Alejandro, and he's talking about the good old days in the San Francisco mission. So let's hear that.
During the 1970s, the Mission District in San Francisco teamed with painters, muralists, poets, and musicians. We called it La Mission, because La Mission was a microcosm of Latin America, and the whole barrio seemed in perfect sync. We set out with our art to remake the world a beautiful place, and we didn't ask anyone's permission to do it. Not knowing any better, we just went out and did it.
All right, if you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with poets Lourdes Figueroa and KLW's own Josiah Luis Alderete. They are the co-organizers of the Flor y Canto Literary Festival in the San Francisco Mission, and the festival runs next weekend from June 12th to the 14th, and there will be readings and film screenings in different spaces in the Calle 24 Latino Cultural District, which is around 24th and Mission. So we just heard that clip from Keepers of the Fire. And so now I want to talk about, because I'm familiar with Alejandro, but I was not familiar with Raul R. Salinas, who is, again, another poet. And he was from Texas, as Josiah said, and he identified as Chican Indio. And which I see is Chicano and Indio. And his story is fascinating. He spent most of his youth in prison. At 38, he became a community organizer and a bookstore owner. So, Josiah, tell us more about him. I was really just touched by his story.
I mean, his story is incredible. And for me, you know, he was one of the poets that I discovered early on when I was looking for Chicano poets. And, you know, he was a huge influence on so many people. The fact that he was incarcerated as well at a young age, he was actually incarcerated 3 times. You know, the fact that he came out of that, created a whole self for himself, you know, and became this really incredible figure in the community. You know, he opened this bookstore, Red Salmon Arts, which is still around now in Texas, you know, and really he was a healer in a lot of ways. So playing his movie with Alejandro's and the connection that they have, it's like good medicina, you know? And it's interesting how many people don't actually know about him, know about Raul, but he was one of these figures. And not only, he was one of these Chicano poets that didn't limit himself. So like he was a jazz poet. If you listen to his oral readings, there's a whole like jazz cadence to him. You know, he did a whole thing with musicians. His name, the way it's spelled, Raul R. Salinas, if you look at it, it's all lowercase smushed together. Mm-hmm. He talks about writing his name like that because of the poet E.E. Cummings and the influence that Cummings had on him. So he's this very interesting poet because he's about as Chicano as you can get. But he was also one of these poets that explored all kinds of other things.
Yeah.
He's a really interesting figure and really, really cool that we're able to play both of these documentaries together, you know, because it's just exciting. And both of the directors are going to be there that night. Laura's coming all the way from Texas, coming all the way down. And Lou's here. He's always on 24th Street. So it'll be nice. It's a good chance to meet the directors in person, too.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you know, you can see hear in his work the Southern blues influence too, as well, because you know he grew up in Texas. So the documentary again that's about him is called Un Trip. So let's hear a clip of that.
I developed as a writer in prison. Up until 1972, I had never written a poem outside of a prison confinement. To understand my situation, where I was and what the hell I was doing there and how I got there and how in the hell I was gonna get out. La Loma, neighborhood of my youth, demolished, erased forever from the universe. You live on, captive in the lonely cell blocks of my mind.
And Julia, you had spoke about this earlier. We have about 6 minutes left. But again, what was the connection between Mr. Salinas and Mr. Murguia?
Yeah, Raul. So Alejandro, when he was here in the, or he's still here in the mission, but Alejandro, all the other things that he did here, he also started a press for a while. It was called Pocho Che, and they published four foundational mission writers. And the first poet that they published was Raul. So there's a whole connection there, you know, between them in a big way. Yeah. And also the activism that went on back then, you know, part of the Chicano movement, they were all, they marched in a lot of eventos together. So yeah, there's a deep connection there.
Nice. Yeah, those documentaries look really, really interesting. So we have about 5.5 minutes, 6 minutes. You know, we got to get some poetry from y'all.
Oh, poetry. Okay.
Okay. Yes, also, Josiah, host of Bay Poets.
Can I very briefly also give a shout out to Fred Ho, which was the sax player that was playing while Raul was talking.
Yeah.
For those of you that don't know, Fred Ho was a pivotal member of the whole Asian jazz scene here in the Bay Area forever. He's a mad baritone player. And Lauda, the director, being the amazing person that she is, included his music in there, which is just phenomenal. So shout out to Fred Ho.
Hey, Fred Ho. Shout out to Fred Ho.
Yeah.
Thank you for the history lesson.
Yes.
Yes. Got to do that. Okay. So which one of you guys? Okay. So we have about 6 minutes, 5.5 minutes. So which one of you want to go first and read a piece?
Lourdes, you go first.
So 3 minutes each.
Okay. Oh, you got it. Okay.
I'll read a portion of a poem that's dedicated to a friend that passed several years ago here in San Pancho. So it's for Pio. Begin memory here. My memory shifts every time I remember home. De hecho de menos. Me fui a buscar nuestro sueño. It had rhythms of cumbia, the city of ours. All I wanted was a raw land, un cuerpo marimacha. Pio came to San Francisco to be an artist. I came to fall in love. Pio spoke Tagalog, loved my Spanish. He was brown, soft-spoken. Migration, he said, is what birds do to survive. We uprooted ourselves for love. I keep tripping over borders. I keep remaking his face. I wanted to go back. He was a painter. All animals move. I don't think we ever had roots. Here in this city, the lights were long, the streets curvy. He loved to remind us of campesinos on the outskirts, how the Filipino migrant farm workers tilled soil alongside Mexican migrant farm workers tending to orchards and tomato fields. It was dirt. What do you do when things fall apart? I came from the fields, landlocked. Theo came from the islands. We were raw, imagining a world longer than ours, where the buildings stood like stone while we moved, cumbia in our hearts, the sweet dance of Mexican polka in our ears. No, the light was different here than there. Here the light mimicked us, making our faces as clear as daylight. And Pio passed away, leaving us this city. La agua se hace negra, aguardiente nos calma. I keep dislocating my tongue. It feels lonely. I am lonely. Pio died alone, refusing to bear weight on us. I imagine that he must have wanted to be buried here, where we dream. The truth is, we're all lonely. Eres hermosa. He died in the hospital waiting room waiting. And to said, how far have we roamed to make each other? There is no cityscape older than this one, where the ocean meets earth, where you refuse to go back because to uproot a tree takes several bodies. There's always a piece of root left. And I stood over his body like elephants do when they grieve one of their own. Here, the water is sweet like the ripples of the lake. I could never afford to build my own house here. It is dusty with bones, mouths gaping. Sometimes it smells of Manila or Mexico City. We were glorious. Here we are nothing. Bio was a dishwasher. Bio was a cook. Bio was an artist. Like you and I, this city is everything. Holy land of milk, honey, Mecca, Babylon. Or was it Sodom on the outskirts of Teotihuacan? And the Sun Pyramid. Our brown bodies, our black bodies, our cooker bodies, our non-bodies, you and I, roaming San Francisco with our white tongues, painters, lovers, poets, you and the city, me and the city, Ciudad Arrienta, where we flower like the rose and die like the tulip. Sin papeles, how do we go back? Sin rumbo, donde tu ser es ilegal. We are everything. Now close your eyes. There are birds migrating to make sense of these movements. Thank you.
Yeah.
when you're talking about grief, I love that line where you talk about you feel like you dislocated your tongue, because I think grief makes you feel that way. Yeah, that was beautiful. Thank you so much. Josiah, we have about 2 minutes.
You're gonna be so proud of me, Janae. Watch me keep the 2 minute time.
Also, watch your language too, as well. Thank you.
Oh, my language. Watch my language. Of course, I'll watch my. I'm always watching my language. I know. I gotta watch my language.
Just reminder to everybody.
Sometimes my language doesn't even know what it's saying. Sometimes, so it's always important to keep an eye on the language. Always, the language has to be kept an eye upon. Okay, so since the Floricanto is happening June 12th through the 14th. 17 free literary events here on 24th Street. I'm going to read a poema for 24th Street
called
Crepusculo on 24th. Viejito taking his bigote for a walk down La 24, bulletproof Pendleton, algodón shoes on, blasting Vicente Fernandez out of tiny speakers stashed in the front pockets of his vaquero blue jeans. The immaculate ramflas on the block lower their soldies respectfully until he passes.
I love the Mission.
I do too.
Yeah, I just love the Mission.
It's the most living neighborhood in the city. No disrespect to the other neighborhoods.
I'm not gonna say anything because I'm from Oakland, so that's between. I'm not taking
well, Oakland's sides. Oakland's a whole other place.
I'm not trying to be an outsider saying anything. Well, I'll just say that I love the Mission. I love going there. I love the Pulse. I love the people. Yeah,
I think a lot of the spirit of the city is in Oakland. San Francisco's in Oakland now. So, for real.
Yeah, that's a whole other discussion. But I'm happy that you all are still doing this. So, so congratulations, you guys, on another festival.
Yeah, I hope we see you all there. It's going to be a beautiful event.
Come out.
Please do. The first night's going to be real special, too. There's going to be over 18 poets up and down 24th Street for the Poetry Pastel. So that one's going to be a banger.
Nice. All right, guys, thank you so much, and thanks for your patience through the tech issues.
Gracias, Janae.
I've been speaking with Lourdes. You're welcome. I've been speaking with Lourdes Figueroa and KLW Josiah Luis Alderete. They're the co-organizers of Floricanto Literary Festival in the San Francisco Mission. And the festival runs next weekend, June 12th through the 14th, in the Calle 24 Latino Cultural District. And coming up, a writing center that empowers Oakland youth. Stay with us. You're listening to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, right here on 91.7 FM KALW. Little Janae Darden, who grew up in East Oakland in the 80s and 90s, would have loved, and I mean loved, a place like Chapter 510. The Youth Writing Center provides a safe and empowering learning space for young writers. Chapter 510 has served more than 6,500 students, and the org centers young Black, brown, and queer voices, and they're celebrating their 10th year anniversary. Their latest book is When the Stars Bloom in Oakland, an anthology of poems by fourth graders. And here with me in studio is Janet Heller. She's an Oakland poet and co-founder of Chapter 510. And Anjali Emsalem, did I say that right, is a writer and educator who teaches in the Chapter 510 program. Who teaches in the Chapter 510 program. I need to take some classes because my tongue is stuck. It has been a day when it comes to technical difficulties, but we made it. Welcome, both
Thank
of you guys.
Thank you so much for having us. It's so great to be here with you.
Yeah, I'm so happy that you all are here. I love Chapter 510. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of it. I have performed there. I have spoken there. And the kids are great. And the staff is great. You all are great. You do so many great things. So I want to know about just how it got started. Janet, tell us.
Yeah. I was going to say, when you actually were at the old space at 2301, I remember you there for a nomadic book for our Black Joy release.
Yeah, on Telegraph, the one on Telegraph. Yeah.
Well, some parents, poets, librarians, teachers wanted a space for Oakland. you know, 2013, 2014, we were gathering, thinking about how to make a space for Oakland. And we started popping up in schools and after school programs, myself and then Tavia Stewart. And we came together to make the space, naming it Chapter 510 because of our beloved area code. And what happened was safety came together around creative writing for 8-year-olds, for 15-year-olds, for 20-year-olds. And all were devoted, all of the folks who came together were devoted to making a space for youth to write and publish and be heard.
Wow.
And so, you know, 10 years later, 6,500 youth have participated. And we have strong relationships with Oakland Unified. Mm-hmm. Many, many Oakland illustrators and artists have been a part of our program. But it's programs like the one you saw when you came to our Lit Fest, where you can see the intimacy of writing is necessary in terms of learning.
Yeah.
So Chapter 510 is a nonprofit. We're a space down at Swan's Market at 9th and Clay, and you know we are connecting youth to the power of their story. And we're centering Black, Brown, and queer youth. Our programs are not only about teaching, but then taking the writing on the page, putting it out in the world, celebrating it. And we also use the practice of bookmaking art so that people are actually touching paper, creasing, stapling, and sewing.
Wow. Yeah, it's very hands-on. And so the, I don't know if the right word is the curriculum or, you know, the style is inspired by, as far as the teaching style is inspired by educator Zarita Hamanda. Is that how you pronounce it?
Zarita Hammond, yeah.
Hammond.
Yes.
And Studio, sorry, my screen is all acting weird right now. Okay, and Studio Pathways.
Yes.
So what, who are they and how did they inspire the curriculum?
Yeah, so Mariah Landers was one of those folks that I was talking about. Educators, parents, and librarians came together. So Mariah Landers was a teacher at North Oakland Community Charter School. She's my daughter's kindergarten teacher.
Oh, okay.
And she created an amazing learning environment. Instead of like learning about her pedagogy was centering the love of learning and loving your students. And so all of our teaching artists come with their expertise. We'll hear from Anjali in a minute. They come from their writing. They come from what they know about writing, and they apply either a theme or a particular point of view to the instruction. So our curriculum isn't coming from one methodology of this is how you teach writing.
Okay.
It comes from culture, it comes from experience, and it can be motivated by the gathering. For what we did with OUSD, we were trying to deepen the love of poetry and making poetry meaningful for children, rather than just thinking about, oh, you know, a poem is an acrostic or a haiku, but I don't have a relationship to it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I've met young people, teenagers even, and they had no idea that there's other poets that look like them, that maybe they're same, you know, same gender, identify their same sexuality, or just they're used to seeing the traditional classics, poets and writers. And so I've talked to kids, I'm like, there's all kind of writers out there. So that must be really amazing. And I'll talk to you as far as like, that must be amazing to teach these kids that the literary world is big.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I had the pleasure of also growing up in the Bay Area. I was actually an intern with Chapter 510 10 years ago.
Oh, you were there from the beginning, I believe.
I know. And I came back this year as a teaching artist, which was incredible. But yeah, you know, the Bay has a prolific and historic scene of the arts, and being able to bring poetry to them in this project for When the Stars Bloom in Oakland, it was over 200 fourth graders, 8 classrooms in Oakland. Every classroom was very different. I brought the same lessons to all of them. But I also was able to share with them my story of how I came up in Oakland as a writer and as an artist. And that felt really meaningful to be able to share with them, because the culture is deep. Yeah.
So people would come in and they would say, the poet's here. The poet's here.
It was very sweet. They're in the hallway.
Like a little bit of a...
The poets are here.
That's so cute. Oh, my goodness. I'd have my pen in the air. Yes, I'm here.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Ashley, tell us about this book, about the theme. Yeah.
So this book, When the Stars Bloom in Oakland, as I said, it's an anthology of over 200 fourth graders in Oakland across OUSD. So I went to 8 OUSD classrooms every week over the span of a 5-week period. And at the end, we did 5 different workshops. And at the end, we each chose a poem that was, you know, the favorite of the student, and that also I felt like would fit, you know, curating a book as a whole thing, especially with 200 poems. So, the project was amazing. The theme was the autumn equinox. So I came in right as the autumn equinox was occurring in the fall, and something I really wanted to highlight and be able to, like, share with these students as they start a poetic journey. You know, fourth grade is a really... it's a huge threshold moment. They're really getting to this age of seeing the world in a different way. And I wanted to show them that, you know, poetry is a way of tuning into our senses and being able to, you know, every day walk home from school, your grandma's making you food for dinner, you're waking up in the morning, that everything can become a poem. And so we really, like, got to the granular in that way. And I think it really worked.
So we met some of the young poets featured in the book at La Escuelita Elementary School in Oakland because you all had a literary festival for the kids. And that literary festival was lit. The traffic was backed up on the street. There was a line for the parents to get in. The kids had displays. It was, like I said, oh, if I was 8 years old, I'd be in heaven right now. But mm-hmm. I was so happy that these kids got to experience that. You guys had free food. It was... You had people tabling and giving out books to kids. It was so incredible.
And all of the books were free. All the poetry books were free.
All of the books were free. They had pencils and everything. Did they get tote bags? The kids had tote bags?
I think that the Lit Fest, which actually was produced by the Oakland Unified School District, Hannah Sufrin, who's the literacy coordinator, she made everything lit.
Yeah.
That's what she did, was she made literature just at the center. And so parents and kids and the mayor was there. And I think the fact that one of the principals said after one of our poets met the mayor that child was literally floating down the hallway at the school.
Yeah.
So the pride, the experience of being seen as a young writer. And the district is putting time and energy into that.
Yeah, just to be seen. Well, let's hear a clip of poet Ileana Tapia. What is your name?
Ileana Tapia.
And Ileana, what school do you go to?
I go to Redwood Heights.
And what grade are you in?
I'm in fourth grade.
And what is the title of your poem?
The title of my poem is Changing Moon.
I'd love to hear it.
I'm the moon, forever changing. Cradling the stars, letting them hide behind me when the sun comes to take my spotlight. When the sun is gone, me and the stars travel to the Milky Way to shine light on the middle of the galaxy and provide light for the world, like we do every night. The humans see us. They say the moon doesn't change, but they don't know. My friends, the stars, ask them how I change. The sun, we meet at the beginning of dawn. Ask him how I change. The nocturnal bats see me when I come down. Ask them how I change, and maybe someday you'll figure it out.
Wow. I am the moon, forever changing, cradling the stars. And then, like, this moon is competing with the sun. So why did you write about the moon in that way?
I wanted to show it from the moon's perspective, kind of, like, being the moon. So at first I was thinking of making it, like, the lonely moon, mm-hmm. to talk about, like, the man on the moon. But I kind of, like, decided to change it and incorporate kind of the things around it, like the sun and the stars and, like, the galaxy around the moon mm-hmm. that it revolves around.
Wow, nice. And do you perform? Because the way you read that poem.
I performed in a poetry slam on March 7th and got third place. But other than that, I don't really perform often.
Okay, well, that's pretty good. You got third place in a poetry slam, Ileana. Okay, so you are a poet.
Yeah.
Do you take the Chapter 510 classes a lot or go to the center?
I think I go, like, sometimes, but not really to take the classes. We just did it, like, with our school.
When I was your age, I would have loved to have gone to something like Chapter 510. So do you like taking the classes with them?
I think when they came to our classes, at first I wasn't really used to it, and I kind of thought it was boring. Mm. But I kind of started to, like, warm up to it and get used to it. And, like, I started writing poems more often. And I really started enjoying it.
And now you a slam champion.
Yeah.
All right. Ileana, thank you so much.
Thank you for your poem.
Thank you.
That was little fourth grade poet Ileana Tapia. How do you all help kids find power and joy in writing? Because that's on your website, something that you do. Because she definitely is empowered.
Yeah, I can answer that question just in terms of, like, you know, my approach with the workshops, finding their voice and power. That's my ultimate goal. Yeah. And I think that's the ultimate goal of this organization, that we come in and just support kids in finding their own voice. And something I was thinking about in you know, looking over these poems is, I hope that after children are published in a book like this, that they have the embodied memory of being a poet and being a published poet, and that that's something that then will come, you know, more naturally to them in their life. And I would say, you know, the first exercise I do with all the children is I bring in a poem that I like and I cut it up, and I have them just manipulate on a table a bunch of words to create a poem. And kids' minds are blown by that. Like, they're like, I mean, it's beautiful. Really? Like, the things they make are insane. Like, I wish I brought it in today, but just, like, these, you know, beautiful metaphors, and they're surprising themselves. And I love to do that exercise first, because I want to show them that a poem can be made from anything, that we can look around and see language around us and use that to create poetry. So that's my entry point, because I think a poem can be really intimidating, you know, to adults too. Like, yeah. Write a poem. It's like, what? And so I feel like that is, like, a slow way of entering this world. And then from there, it gets kind of increasingly independent in their approach to mm-hmm. writing. And they're able to really enter these deep imaginary and personal realms.
Is there a connection between the kids with writing and how well they do in other subjects?
Well, I think just, you know, playing off of what Anjali was saying, it is also the relationship with the adult, because in a classroom with one teacher, a teacher is stretched. And I think with Chapter 510 coming into OUSD fourth graders, we were able to sit with kids, listen. Sometimes it's oral dictation. Sometimes it's thinking through an idea and mm-hmm. then getting it down. And it's that slowing down and being able to understand your feelings and then putting it down on paper. I think what we're seeing even in this early first pilot is that it's feeling that the writing is meaningful to you, then you can use that writing in your other subjects. You can feel the confidence of, you know, even showing up for school. I think that some of the data that we're seeing is because of this project, kids were feeling like school was more meaningful to them, or mm-hmm. they could feel they could be themselves more. Mm-hmm. And I think being yourself in learning is a critical piece. If yeah. you're disengaged from the learning, you can only, you know, do so much. So I think even from your earlier show and now, it is poetry that is the connector. It's the connector to meaning, and it's the connector to the self. And we don't have a lot of space in our world right now for that, and Chapter 510 is helping make the space for that.
If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Janet Heller, poet and co-founder of the Oakland Writing Center, Chapter 510. And Anjali Emsalem is a writer and teaching artist at Chapter 510. Chapter 510 is a youth writing center, and their latest book, When the Stars Bloom in Oakland, an anthology of poems by fourth graders, is out now. And I want to play one more poem performance. And this is a little long, but it's really, really good. And this young poet is Kobe Richardson. What's your name?
Kobe Richardson.
And what school do you go to?
Railwood Heights Elementary.
And what grade are you in?
Fourth grade.
And what is the title of your poem?
Changing Coal.
Ooh, okay, let's hear it.
Technology is changing with AI. The world is changing. I'm changing. I'm getting older and wiser. People are changing, friends are changing. You are changing. Lots of stuff is changing. Water is changing, it's getting dirty, filled with chemicals. School is changing. Lots of rules are changing. Baseball is changing. AI is taking over my favorite sport. The world is changing. Sometimes I feel sad, and sometimes I feel great. When I realize the world is changing, I feel sad. But then I realize more holidays are coming up, more family time is coming up, and I get to spend time with my family, who gives me lots of love, and I get to spread more holiday cheer.
Wow, Kobe, there's so many emotions in that poem, and you talk about so many issues like with technology and AI and environmentalism and family. You have so many issues in your poem. So what inspired this piece?
Which part?
Oh, I'm like, I can talk to you for like the show. Okay, let's talk about the AI part. What inspired the AI part?
Well, my school, we watch CNN 10. It's kind of like a news for kids. And they said, like, in the future, AI may take over baseball and a few other sports. Like, AI is just going to start playing. They're going to replace players.
Oh, okay. Wow. So I can see why that'll make you sad. And then you talk about the water is not clean, right?
Yes. Well, last year, I heard from this fifth grader that if we keep polluting in the water, that we won't have any more water left. And that really inspired me.
Yeah, that is true. If we don't take care of the water, if we don't take care of the earth, that can not be a good thing. But, you know, young people like you give us hope because you're aware of what's happening. And so you can make a difference. But what I love about the poem, too, is that, and I think a lot of people feel like this, is that even though there's a lot of things going on in the world and a lot of things are heavy, but you make sure you have some joy in your life. So you talk about the holidays and spending time with your family and getting lots of love. Why is it important for you to have family and love and joy in your life?
Because some people just don't have families and opportunities like me that God has given me. I just wrote a poem about how we need to help homeless people.
So you write poems often?
Yes.
How has it been for you to be in chapter 510 as a poet?
It was great. Like, when they came in the first day, I was really excited. But then when we started doing poetry, it was like I lost everything. So then my friend Roxy, my table mate, she just said, Kobe, you got this. And I heard over them saying that they would do this. And then I didn't want to copy them. And then so I just put one part, and it was technology is changing with AI.
So when did you say you lost everything? Like, you kind of wanted to do something that wasn't part of the curriculum?
Yes. It was mostly about moon and light.
Oh, okay. You wanted to write on your own subject. Yeah, you kind of lost it. You're like, I don't want to write about that. Got it. Well, this poem is really great, Kobe. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.
That was poet Kobe Richardson in the fourth grade. How do you all deal with the little emotions?
Oh, my God.
Those little emotions. And he was a little journalist because he's like, which question, what do you want me to address? Like, be specific. I was like, okay, Kobe, take me back to journalism school.
Yeah, he threw it back on you.
He watches CNN. So how do you all deal with them?
Yeah.
That? I was so touched. All the kids, really. I was touched by all of them.
Yeah.
But, when they go deep and in their process, because I'm sure personal things come up as well. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I just kind of got emotional just hearing that interview. I love that kid. I love, that school and, all the schools I worked in. As I said before, I think fourth grade is a really interesting time. They're getting to a point where they're about to transition into middle school. And, they're really expressing. Once you unlock that door for them where they can really express themselves, they will express themselves.
Yeah.
And there's a lot going on in the world. There's a lot going on, just personally in people's houses and their hearts. And then, yeah, like all these issues here in Kobe say, like, we watch CNN 10 and, you know, they said that AI is going to take over my favorite sport. Like, that's a lot to process, you know? And so, you know, my reaction to it is I'm just so grateful that they're able to have this space to process those things, because if you're not processing it, it's, you know, who knows where it's going. And so that's kind of the point of this art form. And definitely, yeah, like a lot of emotions came up. I think metaphor opens up a lot of space for children to really like lean in. And so I would say, you know, the emotions of like highest joy to grief. There was a beautiful poem that a kid wrote about losing his dog. And his teacher said to me, he was like, she was like, he's never written really before. Like he like has a really hard time writing. And she was like so shocked. And it was like, again, like giving him the opportunity to actually process what's on his heart, what actually feels relevant to him. And so I saw a lot of that.
Yeah, that's why the arts are so important too. I know sometimes people dismiss them, but you learn how, you learn teamwork in the arts. Again, you learn how to process your feelings and express yourself.
Yeah, and just so you know, one thing on that is also like the teamwork. I love that. Like, it's not just processing on your own. You have community around you. At the end of every session, we'd read our poems. All the kids are snapping and supporting each other. And, you know, Kobe mentioning Roxy saying, like, you got this. Like, it's also about not doing it alone.
Yeah, yeah. What are your thoughts, Janet, after hearing that?
Well, I just remember, I mean, first, it's a six stanza poem. So a lot of kids, sometimes it's a one and done. It's a, you know, how many lines, how many whatever. And I think with this book, you can see there's ambition.
Yeah.
There is an interest to get it all down and also to work at it. And that's been some of the data we've also seen is if you are given a chance to write and have someone who's helping you with the writing, you are committed to revision. Yeah. You are committed to getting it stronger and clearer and more poignant and getting down to it's okay, you know, I may be lonely, but hitting on AI and baseball and the environment, it's he's got all the greatest, you know, the greatest subjects there. So, you know, I really enjoyed seeing how this project came together just in 4 or 5 months because of a teaching artist like Anjali who can stand in front of a classroom and get kids just to want to start to write and learn about themselves and be dedicated. And it takes also more time, like multiple times to write something that's significant. And I think that's what's important too is whether it's an after school program or an in school program that you're given the time. It's not just like write it, turn it in, you're done, but work it over after time.
Yeah, no, that makes a huge difference. And we have about 20 seconds left. So how can people find out about Chapter 510? Because I know you work with OUSD, but if for kids outside of OUSD, how can they access your organization?
Well, we have an after-school program, and we also have an in-school program at Westlake Middle School. So check us out on our website, which is chapter510.org. We're on Instagram as well. And our programs are typically start in September. We don't have any camps or things right now. So if you're a parent, a student, someone who wants to get involved, check out our website at chapter510.org and come to our space. Our space is at 9th and Clay in downtown. If you want to get your long beans on a Friday, you can come. The farmer's market is right in front of our space. And we'd love to see you. And we'd love to have you get involved somehow.
All right. Both of you, thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Thank you. Congratulations on 10 years.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Janet Heller, co-founder of the Oakland Youth Writing Center, Chapter 510, and Anjali Epsilon, who is a teaching assistant there, teaching artist. When the Stars Bloom in Oakland, an anthology of poems by fourth graders, is out now. You can stop by Chapter 510 in downtown Oakland, again right by Swan's Market, to get your copy and to check out the space. And we'll post more audio of the kids performing on KLW Sights and Sounds website. website. Give us a day or so. That's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, our board operator, Marla Davies, and thank you for tuning in. Just want to say rest in peace to singer Peebo Bryson, who died on Tuesday night. Also, rest in peace to muralist Don Fontes, who painted those really cool murals of giraffes and wild animals under the 580 freeway in Oakland. We'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Until then, be good to yourselves and each other.